Hi everybody, this is Deborah Friedis, and I am sitting in Tel Aviv in Noah Dar's studio with Noah Dar. Noah, can you please say hello?
Hello.
Great, thank you. So I have a lot of questions for you, but I want to start with a very basic one. What drew you to dance? How did you start dancing?
I started dancing as a child. I was born in a kibbutz, and there was this a studio, a school for dance that was belonged to all the kibbutzim in the area. And I went there since I was 9 or 8. I was more interested in gymnastics, and I was practicing gymnastics, but the coach told me after a few trials that I'm a bit, I'm a coward. But she saw that I'm dancing very well, so she said, go to dance, leave the gymnastics. But then it took me a while till I really got focused on it, and I think when I was 13, I decided that that's what I want to do. And I think it was my best mean for expressing myself as a child.
And what style was the dance training that you were doing when you were 13 and afterwards?
There was modern dance with influences of Martha Graham, but not precisely Martha Graham. Also ballet classes in the technique of the English Academy, the Royal Academy. But there was also improvisation classes.
So after your training, how did you start performing? What groups were you working with here in Israel or abroad?
I went to an audition for scholarship from the American Israel Foundation. And one of the testers were Nira Paz. She was the director of the Bat Sheva Ensemble at the time. I was 18, and she invited me to join the ensemble. I danced there for 2 years. And then I went to New York with a scholarship of Merce Cunningham, but I danced there with companies of Zvi Gottheiner, Netta Puvelmacher, and Jeanette Stoner.
I'm curious what repertory you performed with the Bat Sheva Ensemble. At the time, was it all Ohad Naharin's choreography?
No, it was before Ohad came back to Israel from New York. The artistic director at the time was David Vir. And they had, it was a repertory company then. So there was many choreographers, especially from abroad who came. Daniel Azralov, I remember, Doug Veron, especially Americans.
What is it about growing up on the kibbutz which then influenced your work?
In the kibbutz, there is a lot of concern with the group, with the other children from your age group, where you're born with them, you live with them, you are with them all the time, all your growing period. It's a forming experience, it's a formating experience. It's very intensive. It's like a family, but it's not a family. You are very connected, but you always want to go away. And so this is in one side, I think. Second side is the relation to nature, to the field, to the mountains, to the Sea of Galilee, near where I born up. Also a complex relations with for Zionism, for the sacrifices the society has to make in order to keep the idea of Zionism. it's a mixture, I think, of love and hate relations.
What motivated you to start choreographing?
When I started choreographing, it was when I was in Tamar dance group. It was I came there from New York. The Jerusalem Foundation was decided that they want to have a modern dance company in Jerusalem. It was in the middle of the 80s, and they asked Tzvi and Amir Kolban to found it. Tzvi was then in New York, and Amir was in Germany. They decided to come back, and Tzvi asked me to join. So we came from New York, like five or six Israeli dancers, and Amir also brought with him some dancers. And we formed the Tamar Dance Group, which was a collective of from our kibbutz background, a collective of dancers, creators. Everybody dance, everybody choreograph, and everybody have equal say in the program of the company, in all the way the company will take. So in this atmosphere, I started to look for my own language. And also the dancer, I think I was unsatisfied with the material I had to dance as a dancer at that time, and I was looking for my own, finding my own voice.
In terms of finding your own voice, from a movement perspective, how would you describe your movement vocabulary?
It changed a lot through the years. Because I was a dancer for other choreographers for 10 years before that, I was, in the beginning of my choreography, I tried to forget everything I know. And I start from a very, very basic movement, not complex, not ornaments, not like I was drawing from babies' movements, from animal movements, from Aztec sculptures or African sculptures, and I was trying to find the very basic and very simple. And so that was in the beginning, and then little by little, I allowed myself to elaborate it and to make it more detailed all the time. More and more words were accumulating to the language.
What do you consider to be your most successful work?
In which term successful?
We can have a couple different ones. If for more most successful for you?
Successful, yeah, because there is a success with the audience, how long a piece can keep the interest of the audience, how many years it can run, or how many performances it can have, and the success with the critics, and success for me, which is different. So I think the most successful with the audience was a piece that I did in 98. I don't know. There was also other afterward, but there was also successes with the audience afterward. But in this one, I want to say in particular, it called Aizarus Frida. And it was about the life and work of Frida Kahlo, the painter. When I made it, I felt that I'm not completely in my, it's not completely my cup of tea. Yeah? It's like something that I felt like, you know, like that you wear something that is not completely comfortable for you. But the audience love it because it was very colorful. It was very theatrical. They can follow each step. There was a lot of props. There was a lot of Mexican music. I like this work. It's not that I, but I'm just exaggerate a bit. And then, but like 2 years later, I made a piece called Achilles Tendon, which for me, it's one of the most, it's like a work that I feel that I get to a completion of my wishes about this work, something that I'm very satisfied with and feel very connected to each part of it, which is not the way with many works. It's always parts in works that you like more or less, things in works that you feel that you didn't really solve till the end. Or, and in this piece, I felt it was very complete. And the audience didn't like it as much. Yeah, it was very bare, very... the bare stage, bare... The costume was very, very simple. The idea was quite abstract, for example.
The first work that I saw of yours was Tetris. The audience seemed to really have a very different experience in that work, and I'm curious if you could describe a little of it for listeners. It can't quite compare to the experience of watching it, but I think it's a very interesting work and very unique.
In Tetris, which is a collaboration with... visual artist Nati Shamia Ofer, we were trying to invent a space that will be a laboratory for investigating relationship between spectators and performers, and we were looking for a completely different way of viewing dances and movement and different experience for the spectators to watch a performance. And after many trials, we came out with a platform that is 1.60 meters above floor, with 69 holes in the surface of the platform, and the spectators, most of the show are standing underneath the platform, and only their heads are popping out, and all the performance happened between these 69 heads, which make the spectators a complete part of the performance. The spectators are also a performers, because they see each other all the time, they're exposed all the time, as much as dancers are exposed, and they have to deal with investigating their boundaries, how far they can absorb proximity, intimacy with the other spectators and with the performers, how much they can, how comfortable or how uncomfortable they can get to be so much exposed. And also they can get to see, to watch a performance from a close-up point of view where only cameras in videos or film can do. Usually in here you can see everything from a few centimeters away from you, and also this angle of viewing from underneath make you feel as a spectator maybe like a small child with grown-ups doing the things above your head, or the dancers sometimes look when they walk above you like giants. So you are in a state of experiencing all these different and new sensations all the time.
Definitely. It was a wild experience coming to see that, or I guess I should say in a sense be a part of it, because it was like being a part of it. And obviously given my own path as a dancer and as a researcher, I've danced in a lot of works, I've seen a lot of works, I've been in the studio for a lot of rehearsals, and yet this was a completely new perspective. I've never had my head at the level of the floor, even when I'm in rehearsals, you know, sitting down. It's a very, very different sensation from really being in the midst of that and having dancers hurling their bodies around the space and jumping over me or peering at the person next to me and me being able to see all the other spectators. So it was definitely something that I've never experienced before from that angle, despite all of the experiences I've had. So that was a really wonderful experience to still have something fresh. So I enjoyed it very, very much. It was good fun. Can you tell me a little bit about your creative process with your dancers?
It's varied a lot. Basically, I can say that there is pieces or part of pieces that have a very specific wish for the movement I want to use, and then I improvise in the studio in front of the dancers, and they learning with me the movement sequences, and while they're learning, I observe them, and then I'm forming it little by little. And from the movement, from there, absorbing my movement, then come the work of interpretation, of feeling this movement with meaning, with images. And there is a second kind of way is... it's improvisation of the group of dancers. When I'm coming to the studio with a certain idea, I'm just searching my way with the dancers around this idea, going to different ways, and from these guided improvisations, sometime a more specific idea coming out, and sometimes also specific sequence but basically what I take out from the improvisation is situations that comes out. Like in Tetris, for example, there is this, I don't know if you remember, but there is a part of we call it danger scenes, when each one or a couple of dancers trying to challenge their fear borders, how much far they can go with something that they are fear from. So we sat in a circle, and each one, somebody else came up and did what he did, and then somebody else joined him or pushed him out or invite him in. And from this session came out all these scenes. Different scenes are all dancers' scenes, and then we shape it. We mold it. We giving it certain dynamics, certain clearness.
It's interesting that you mentioned fear. One of the things that I remember from that performance was just how fearless the dancers seemed. And I remember thinking, as someone who also performs, that the environment is one that I would be, in a sense, terrified of. But they just really threw themselves into it. Maybe they conquered their fears through that exercise. Is there anything Israeli about your work? And if so, what?
It's hard. I don't like these nationality differences, but I'm Israeli. There is a very nice quote from an Israeli poet, I think he was active in the 30s and in the 40s. His name is Shaul Tcherniakhovsky. And he said that the man is only he's molded in the form of his birthplace. There is a lot of truth in it. When I'm creating, I'm bringing myself with.
Do you think there's a particularly Israeli physicality? This is one thing I've been thinking about just coming here. If I too am shaped by my birthplace as an American, encountered some people who have said that they look at me and when I move, they know I'm not Israeli. And I'm starting to sort of figure out what it is that I'm seeing or feeling physically here as compared to in the States.
From what I see, there is some, the physicality is, I feel it's a bit more external than what I see in European dancers or American dancers. Something in the way they move is talking louder, taking a lot of space, using the weight in a way that it's everything is heavy and making an impact on the surface, and they throw themselves more.
Another question: how has Israeli contemporary dance changed since you started performing with the Bat Sheva Ensemble and then since you started choreographing here in the 1990s? How Israeli contemporary dance, the scene at large, or the style, both, they're connected.
I think it's developed a lot. Since I was a dancer, the ensemble, first, so many choreographers came out. There is so many independent choreographers that work outside the three main companies. The place it took in the Israeli cultural conscious is much larger than it used to be. Of course, the fact that Susan Dalal was built and there was a center for the dance, a place which is really a beautiful place and very attractive to this form of art, and the fact that Ohad Naharin came to and he brought with him a tremendous force to the scene. There was a lot of initiative and energy in this field that was building up from the beginning of the 90s, and in consequence, there was the more budget go to this field. More foundations are supporting. There is new venues for performing. So in large. The scene grew a lot, and it's really so rich now, and there is so many choreographers that even me, I never saw their work, or it's really beautiful.
So now, in 2008, there are so many people working in Israel in dance, as you said. It's really, really flourished over the last 20 years. And what do you think is most unique about your work? What sets you apart from other Israeli choreographers?
Well, it's the only thing I can say that what set me apart is that I'm doing it. It's very hard for me to specify my work. I feel each work is different. Each work is relating to the work before it in a contrary way. I'm like, for example, Tetris was very conceptual work. What led me was a concept, and in Arnica, with the work that came later, I was trying, because of dealing so much with concept in Tetris, I was trying to go back to movement, to the body, to the body sensations, to the communication through body and through body language. And I think what defined my work is myself.
You touched a little bit on how your work, your sensibility for your work is somewhat related to your upbringing on a kibbutz. And I'm curious if you could speak about how your work responds or is related to Israeli society, to the feelings here, to the situations here, to the culture here.
First of all, it's correspond unconsciously. The being here or being in Israel it's something that you cannot run away from. Yeah, it's there. It's the situation, the political situation, the historical situation is very present, and it's gets inside you if you want or you don't. There was works that I touch upon this themes much more deliberately, and there was. And in the others, it just sneak inside. Even in Tetris, we worked on it during the Second Lebanon War. All this fear theme came from the situation that was at the time. This structure, its image became immediately a shelter, yeah, a bomb shelter. It's there and it influences you in the process. But there was work that I was in a work called A Noela, Nothing But, which its motto came from the what I quote for you before from this poet, from Joel Chernichovsky. It was about growing up in a war. In I grew up in Dgania, which is the first kibbutz, but it's also in the north. Since I was 4 years old, there was all the time, each few years, there was all the time the situation of war where we found ourselves in shelters, sleeping there, running to the shelter in the middle of the night. The kibbutz in the October War, in Yom HaKippurim War, got empty completely from its men. There was only women and children in the place. A father that is away for like at least a month each year because of the army, and of course during the wars for more than that. Seeing the airplanes going to the Golan Heights to bomb there, seeing the rows of tanks going up to the Golan Heights during the Yom Kippur War. And parallel to it, the education and the glorification of the war in the children's education, the glorification of the heroes that died in the war, all the ceremonies that as a child you were participate in, the dreadful poems that children in Israel, even now, you know, when I'm going to my boy, my oldest boy is 11, when I'm going to the ceremonies in school of Memorial Day or Independence Day, they sing dreadful things, the dreadful poems like that still glorify the sacrifice of young people for the country, for Israel. So I use in this work a lot of texts that we used to sing during these ceremonies, and I brought them from the perspective of a child which is terrified from the words that he's saying, from the meaning of the words that he's saying. So I think this was the work that was most deliberate dealing with these experiences. But in all the works, there was the intensivity, I forgot about it. There was this work that I called In a Black, Black Land, which came out in a period where there was a lot of terrorist attacks in Israel, in Tel Aviv, all these bombs and that was exploding, and it was a really terror time. And I deal there with the idea of that your internal terror becoming true, like your nightmares becoming your reality. But it was in much more elaborate or abstract way of working with these ideas than the other works that I was talking about.
Is there anything particularly Jewish about your work? And if so, what?
I don't think so. I'm much more relating to my Israeli experience than to my Judaism. It was always a question for me, what is it? I'm completely unreligious. I think the experience of my father during the Holocaust was affecting me a lot, but it's melted into the Israeli experience, yeah, and didn't stay a part of it.
So thank you so much, Noah, for talking with me and sharing all these thoughts with our audience.
Thank you very much. It was very interesting to me also.